Oh, fall is here. Nice and chilly this week. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, October 12th, 2021. That's all just one zeros and twos. Wow. That's interesting. Alongside Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry.
Very interesting.
On the show today, we'll be talking about, a physical product reveal from an upstart game company that's making the rounds. Ian will be talking about Metroid Dread and All-Star Nickelodeon Brawlers. Nickelodeon All-Star Brawls. The state of retro game collecting 2021 and more fun. We're always having fun. Ian, how was your weekend?
My weekend was fantastic, Patrick.
Fantastic.
It was fantastic. It was mine and Vonnie's anniversary.
Aw.
Yeah, we've been together 12 years, seven of those married. We got married on what we decided. We settled on a date that was like, yeah, we probably started dating seriously around this date.
All right, so you celebrate, wait, not your marriage anniversary, you're getting
together.
No, I
mean, they're the same day.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So you picked it around that time.
Yep. So we went to Disney. We hadn't been there in a while.
Right.
And we did both California Adventure and Disney. And we had a ton of fun. I just have fun hanging out with Vonnie. That's probably why we're together. We enjoy
each other's company. I hope you enjoy your company.
And we had a really good time. Well, I say that because I had a blast this weekend, and I'd do it all over again. But one of the things we wanted to see, we were iffy on whether or not we really needed to do California Adventure. And we did it because that's where they just added they call it the new Avengers campus. So people, I mean, if you probably know how Disney works, Disney parks are generally divided into like Universal
sections.
Studios does the same thing. They divide them into small little theme sections. So you get like Tomorrowland and Frontierland. There's, you know, Galaxy's Edge in Disneyland, which is Star Wars. In California Adventure, you know, they have them divided up. There's Pixar Pier, and the new one, the Avengers Campus, opened sometime earlier this year. And I think I might have talked a little bit about it when Galaxy's Edge opened. I'm not a Star Wars fan. I'm probably more interested in Marvel properties, I guess, than I am Star Wars. But I'm really kind of cool on both of them these days.
Sure.
But I loved the Star Wars Galaxy Edge area when I visited it because it's just a cool place to walk around. The theming, the buildings, the sets, essentially, were very, very cool to see. Avengers Campus just felt like a very cynical money grab to me. There's one ride. And the lines were so big and it went down for half the day that we didn't even get on it. We were in a virtual queue. But it looks like what a lot of these new rides are, probably similar to the Star Wars ride in Galaxy's Edge, where it's kind of like a video game meets like a sort of a ride. And I'm not like super interested in those. But even if it was the greatest ride ever, you walk through Avengers Campus and it's a lot of places where you can buy stuff. You can buy a Star Wars robot droid. You can buy food from Pym's, you know, Test Kitchen Laboratory, which we ate at.
That's literally the name of the place you
Pym's
eat at?
Pym's Test Kitchen. Yeah.
That sounds horrible.
I actually thought Pym's Test Kitchen was fun.
Was there like vials everywhere?
It's kind of like ketchup
in a potion vial or science?
It looks like a test kitchen. But there's
That's
just
so weird.
My point
That's
is there's
forced. I'm sorry.
There's not a lot to do there.
I mean, how do you make Avengers, like their headquarters, like a theme? Like it's
right. So it was kind of weird. There wasn't a lot to do there. The constantly blaring dun 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 dun.
Oh god.
Yeah, Marvel music was like.
Did you see the robot animatronic Spider-Man that swings around?
No.
I mean, it's not a human because it looks like a person.
Yeah, I know. There's one. We didn't see him. But
the whole forcing Spider-Man to the Avengers thing, I just can't stand. But
well, that's what it was.
I get it though.
It was very Spider-Man and Avengers themed, and
Spider-Man was never a real Avengers team member.
If I liked either of those more than I do, it might have been interesting, but I don't think it would. I think I would have been disappointed either way. There's just nothing to do, and unlike the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which looks like a Star Wars set.
Sure.
This literally looks like a campus. It looks like a fucking college. I mean, it just.
And it's like the Avengers, they just like sleep there. Like that's not where they do shit. You know, like they go out and fight people. They don't hang out there all the time. Like the Avengers had their own lives. Like Tony Stark, like they came together to. The whole concept's fucking weird. And a lot of it's obvious from the movies, giving their dictation on about how these superheroes operate. And it's like, no, they don't hang out on a campus. They don't take classes together.
So I can't speak to the ride, but I mean, I would say this. If you're a huge Marvel fan and you're like sitting there right now going, do I need to get out to Disneyland to see Marvel's Avengers campus? No, you don't.
But is it connected to the comics at all, or is just all movie stuff? It has to be all movie stuff.
It's very much all movie stuff, yeah. So that was kind of a bummer, but I mean, we had fun with it, you know. So
that's cool.
So it was a great weekend, and I played a bunch of games, but we'll get to that soon.
Well, talk about your games then. Go for it. Let's go. Let's get all Ian out of the way.
So I played a lot of Super Monkey Ball 2, Banana Mania, which just came out, which is a combination of Monkey Ball 1, 2, and Deluxe with unlockable characters. And it's a really nice package. My main problem with it is that it adds all these neat bonus characters you can play as.
Uh-huh.
Kiryu from Yakuza, Sonic and Tails. But you can only play them in the main game. You can't play them in any of the mini games. And I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense to me. They don't have different stats or anything like that. It would have been really nice because a lot of the additions are cosmetic. There's costumes you can add to the monkeys and shit like that. But you can't use them in the party games, which are like one of the biggest draws.
I know, Ian. I know.
And the main game is very difficult. But I enjoy it. Of the bigger stuff that came out this recently, Vani got Metroid Dread.
Big stuff. Did she like it?
Yes. She only really got to play it for a night, but she made it through, I think, the first main section of the game. And a couple things I want to say. Sound design is fantastic. Like, just immaculate sound design. And
the effects, creepy.
Yeah, very creepy effects. Great, like, sound effects for, like, Adam, the computer's voice. Just the background ambiance is really good. I enjoyed just listening to it. I complained when the game was first shown that I thought it looked too clean and I didn't like the look of it. I still think it kind of falls into that too clean category, but I do like after watching the game in motion and kind of seeing like a whole chunk of the world come together as Vani explored it, I really do like the look of it. The big thing that I think is dividing people is the EMMI robots, which are basically like these pseudo sort of indestructible security robots that chase Samus around.
Main foe of the game?
Foes, yeah. Foes. But that's what they kind of showed in the trailers. And there's some people out there complaining that it's too hard. And I can understand that, you know, maybe getting frustrated, but Vani can get frustrated at difficult games very easy. And she just found it fun. She kept restarting. There was a section she had to redo like 12 times, but like she kept opening the map and, you know, like trying to plot out a path through the area and like just accepting it as part of a game. She's been having a lot of fun with it. And one of the nice things is, unlike a lot of Metroidvanias, there's not a lot of backtracking to a previous save spot.
Okay.
It seems like if you die at one of those Emmy zones, because they're separated into like zones where you can kind of tell that where they are, it looks like it starts you right back outside that area. So you can just kind of try again. So it looks like there is some sort of concession to this newfound difficulty. I think overall people have been pretty impressed with it. And I'm happy. I'm happy that, you know, they finally got an entry in this series that people seem to be enjoying. Maybe I will play it at some point. I've just got a lot on my plate. And when Vani told me she was interested in Dread, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to watch you play Dread. I don't like Let's Plays unless they're Vani plays.
And then we got a code from Steve from I-95 Creative sent you a Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl code.
Thank you, Steve, for that code. So I've been kind of looking forward to this because early on there was talk about the online having rollback netcode, which made it sound like the developers were taking the game pretty seriously. And they have. I said something online the other day. So my big problem with this game is there is zero voice acting whatsoever. There are no voices for any of the characters.
That's weird. That's a weird decision.
And I don't think it was a decision. It was we don't want to pay the money.
They have to pay extra to get voice samples?
Yeah, they probably have to pay the voice actors. I don't know what their, you know, what the rights are, but I'm assuming there's lots of weird licensing rights in
you,
there.
You don't think they could have got just samples from existing, like, episodes, what have you? They still have to pay the actors they didn't want to.
What I want to make clear here is all of the complaints I have are mainly revolve around a lack of content and no voice samples. And I don't think that's the development team's fault at all. I think that's absolutely 100% a budget concern. And I really wish that Nickelodeon would realize that there are people who want to buy this and want to support it, and making it seem like an actual full-fledged AAA release is going to do nothing but help them.
Sure.
Having all of these budget, you know, it looks like a budget video game, sounds like a budget video game because none of these characters talk, but it doesn't really feel like one. The game actually plays very well. I really enjoyed the gameplay on it. And when I posted to Twitter originally talking about it, I hadn't put as much time in, but I kept playing. I kept playing with different characters. And the game's fucking fun. It is. It's a good time. And the roster is interesting. It's obviously missing some stuff that I would like. Again, it comes down to licensing and rights. Mm-hmm. But I really do want to commend the team for making something that plays very well. If you like Smash Brothers, it's a little different, a lot the same. And I think that, you know, there's something here for people to play, especially if you want a good online experience. I played a bunch of online games, and I had no connection problems at all.
Who's your main? Who's you like?
I've been using Toph from Avatar and April from Turtles and SpongeBob because I love SpongeBob.
Who doesn't like SpongeBob?
SpongeBob is adorable. He's a wonderful little guy.
Is Patrick in the game?
Patrick's in the game. So, I mean,
I like Patrick.
I don't want to tell people not to get it because it's fun, but just know what you're getting into. I realize that with video game characters, like especially Nintendo game characters that normally don't have a lot of dialogue, you would notice if there was no voices there. But I honestly don't even think it would be as big of a deal as it is with something like this, because these are cartoon characters.
You hear them all
the time. 50% of what you relate to them or know about them is their voices and their catchphrases.
It's more important.
Yeah, it's way more important.
To have Ren and Stimpy fight without hearing them say something catchy would be
To have
weird.
SpongeBob fight without any, like, no giggles, no...
Or something, yeah, like, I mean, or something.
Even just a grunt or, like, something. It's fucking strange.
Oh, no!
So
there's my SpongeBob.
It's a good game, and like I said, the developers, hats off to you for, you know, like, really putting some effort into it. It's fun. But yeah, I would love to see some sort of post-launch support.
Yeah, maybe successful enough they can put sound in, like, more voices. That's weird.
Someone said that the game's been data mined, though, and there are additional characters supposed to be coming. Tommy Pickles is one of them. Supposedly Rocco was in the data mine, which would be really, really cool. And then there was a few more. I think a couple.
Tommy's so little. How do you play as Tommy?
I think Tommy will probably be like SpongeBob size, but that's what I said to Vonnie. I said, it's going to be weird if Tommy Pickles is just this fucking adult sized baby.
With a diaper.
So, I don't know. That's my thought on it. It's fun.
You got to get Doug in there.
Doug, I mean,
I know they don't have the rights to him anymore.
Yeah, but it was Disney, but still, figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out.
Put Quail Man in there.
This could be like the TV equivalent of what Smash Bros. Became, like a celebration of all the TV cartoon, you know what I mean, for kids. Like, that would be a fantastic thing, direction if they went in there.
So I'm positive on it, but...
7 out of 10?
7 out of 10.
7 out of 10.
You give me some voices in there, I'll bump that up to an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Real quick, I got to thank Replicate for sending me their 1942/43 arcade cabinet right here. Has the wood grain on it. It even comes with a little extra controller. These are well put together. Thanks, Zim. It's a limited edition. I didn't realize that.
I think they're all technically limited editions.
So, thanks so much for that. Ian likes Replicates, obviously.
I love the Dragon's Lair one that a listener sent me. It's so fucking cool.
Then I was at Too Many Games in Pennsylvania. That was an experience. 3 days. Thanks to everyone that came out there. And we'll talk more about sort of like the remnants of Too Many Games in a later topic, because it was shocking to see the state of retro games there, we'll just say. But it was a great event. Everyone was masked up. I felt safe being there. It was fine. I'm sure most people in Pennsylvania are vaccinated by now. It's like up to almost 70% fully vaccinated. I believe in the state. It's getting up there. But it was full. Friday was really full, Saturday and Sunday. I sold a lot of books, sold a bunch of CU podcast pins. Eight or nine people asked me for RBI baseball stickers. I forgot to bring RBI baseball stickers. I'm sorry out there. I got some of those RBI baseball stickers. I said, no, that's the one thing I forgot. I knew I forgot something in the back of my head.
Double fisting over here.
And it was that. But it was good to see some of the vendors I'd seen in the past. Real quick, there's a GoFundMe for Forgotten Freshness, who are unfortunately robbed at the event, cash stolen. And Frank from Forgotten Fresh is one of the nicest dealers of games I've ever met.
Yeah, super nice guy. Love the dude.
So they have a GoFundMe going out. You can just search for Forgotten Fresh this week, go on GoFundMe, and it'll come up, and anything you can do to support them would be appreciated. They were robbed of $30,000.
Fuck.
So
fuck.
That's devastating. But we're going to rally together and help them out.
I hope those scumbags fall into a fucking hole.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. You have to watch out for people like that. But other than that, it was great to see everyone. I saw that one vendor I always mentioned. He is the game doctor on Instagram. His name is, I believe, Mike. And he's the one who always has, like, I finally got one. I don't have it out here. The mock-up little Mike Tyson ugly dolls. They showed it at, like, an event back in, like, 88 in Vegas. Stuff like that. Always has the promo stuff. You've seen him there before. You would know. He had a display for, like, the magazines for Nintendo Power that you would put in, like, a shop with the peg holes on. Like, stuff that you got to search around for this stuff. You know, so I finally got the Mike Tyson's little ugly doll with, like, a made-up belt and, like, and vest. It's, like, that big. It's hideous looking, but it looks like Mike Tyson. So I got that. Other than that, I didn't spend a huge amount on stuff. But shout out to Daryl Best, who we see, he leaves comments for us. Also, he brought me Buffalo Pizza, which unfortunately some people dragged on Twitter, but it was tasty.
What do you expect from a slice of pizza that fucking traveled from Buffalo?
It traveled the whole state. More than one state. Traveled a state and a half, but it was tasty. Thank you so much. He also sold me, he gave me a great deal on a Switch Lite. And I almost bought a Switch Lite. I almost bought a Switch Lite when they did the refurbished ones. They gave me a great deal on this. And, like, the reason why I don't take my big Switch is that the big Switch is a little cumbersome to travel, throw it in, like, your backpack. This is sizably smaller, and I don't worry about this much with the Joy-Cons falling off.
Sizably smaller?
Yeah, sizably smaller.
Noticeably smaller?
Noticeably smaller. So I'm very happy. Thank you for the good deal. He gave me, like, a bro deal and a half on this. So I'm very happy. And there's already, like, a Final Fantasy game on this. I guess I can wipe it. But I have most of my games are physical that I have, so I won't have a problem playing it on this. But I can always just wipe it.
I also noticed that you keep taking the Best sticker and sliding it over towards your side.
I say this is mine.
Yeah.
So
friend Antoinette Carey.
Yeah. So she's my con waifu. She always is, if you see me at a convention with a half Irish, half Italian gal, that's Antoinette. And she, we partner up at tables. We look after each other's stuff. She's a great artist. And she made some stickers and gave them to us. Take a look in a book. Ian's favorite one is the cursed Kirby with arms and legs, probably.
Yep.
That's one that's horrifying but hysterical. What else did you get?
I'm also going to put the But For Me, It Was Tuesday.
Vonnie might steal that one from me. Oh, she likes that?
I think Vonnie will probably steal the Not Today Snorlax one.
Let me show that one.
We have Bill Nye. And then a quote from Spy Kids 2, which I've never seen, but it's, do you think God stays in his heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created? I've heard Spy Kids 2 is a very strange movie.
Yeah, so these are all original artworks by her. We always do sushi together there, and you can check her out, etsy.com/shop/eastofhaven, if you want to check out some of her work. She also has t-shirts there as well. Rest in peace, Rocco. Right there. Going back to the event, it was weird to be at the event. I'm the old man at the club now at the event. So I'm past too many games. Lots changed in 2 years. A lot. Even if I was to say 3 years. And you'd have the old guard be at too many games, as the guests there. You'd have people like Norm and Pixel Dan and Gerard there. And other folks that, were on YouTube back like 10 years. When I went there now, most of the guests, I didn't recognize some of these guests. I had no idea who some of these people were. They're super young. Like, so when you do the hangouts at night, they do like the hangout party thing. The average age of everyone was like 24. It seemed like 24, 25. Like, I was arguably the oldest person in rooms at certain times. Like, by like a good degree. Probably like me and James. I'm older than James by 2 months. Yeah, so, like, I could have been the oldest one there.
People like young faces. We're getting old. We're being put out of pasture.
It was that country song. It's a young man's town. That's a country song from, like, 15 years ago,
I believe. Like it could be.
But that's what it's about. It's great. Speaking of that, I saw, good old Scott DeWaz. Nice kid. Super nice kid. You remember me from a couple of years ago when I spoke, taught him. The fact that, like, he even in 2 years, he's blown up so much in just 2 years. Like, 2 years ago, he was pretty popular. You know, 2 years ago, 2.5 years was the last time I saw him. And 2.5 years, he's through the orbit. Super talented, super funny, super witty. Like, I call him a kid. He's, like, 24. But, like, to me, he's like a kid compared to, like, you know, old-timers like me. But I ran into him. Brad Cinema Snob, haven't seen him in years. Said hi to him. Super nice. And I didn't spend a huge amount of money, but we'll get into that a bit later. But you can spend a lot of money at ultimatenintendo.com if you want.
You
can get those RBI baseball stickers that I forgot to
get.
I forgot to get there. You can get the SNES Super Nintendo guidebook, the DVDs not for resale, and the CU podcast pins, which we sold a bunch of at Too Many Games. And I'm going to be back on Twitch tomorrow, Wednesday, twitch.tv/countrycode. And I'm going to be at Retropalooza October 23rd and 24th. That's like a week and a half away already. I have no time, no rest for the weary, right? Let me just say this. This event, all these events take something out of me. But I needed a warm-up to this event. By Saturday afternoon, I was like out of it. This is a Friday, Saturday, Sunday event, Too Many Games it was. I was out of it by Saturday afternoon. You know how much this takes out of you. But like, I was like, whoa, I feel older. I feel older by the year. Like this 2 year layoff.
Saps, yeah.
This 2 year layoff, it felt like lots changed in 2 years. Not just how everyone is and how we act, but like physically, I'm just like,
yeah, no, it exhausts you. I mean, going to Disney was, I mean, probably the first real big thing I've done since.
Was it big, big?
No. You've killed that. Since. Probably the first real big thing I've done since the pandemic. And, I mean, Bonnie and I were just fucking exhausted.
Exhausted.
By the time we started Disney on Tuesday, I felt like we were already on our way out of the park. We were just finished. And being around people can be exhausting, too. So
forgot to bring up the pizza that Dara brought. Had those caramelized little mini... Gadget?
Gadget.
Yeah, okay.
This is my little pin I got at Disney.
Little. It's gigantic.
Not into furry stuff, though. Anyway,
just making that clear. So he just mailed a bunch of stuff he didn't ask for.
I was just funning around.
It's always interesting when you're on Twitter looking at news and new releases. Depending on what it is, you might see some images you don't want to see on your timeline. Just when you're scrolling about video game news or what have you, you might end up seeing engorged pieces of
oh, I was flipping through my Twitter feed in line, and I think someone was looking over my shoulder because I was like, "Oh, that's porn," and I heard someone behind me go, "Whoop."
To make clear, I wasn't looking for it.
I wasn't. It was just there.
Yeah, it happened. They slip through sometimes. Yep. Sometimes they slip through.
Yeah, people retweet shit.
I report them because, like, if they just tag like the item, like the news item, like that shit, that's not right. I don't want to see that on my timeline. You know, all fun and games, but not. I'm looking for other stuff.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You want to talk about the original GTA games being delisted digitally?
I mean, you can if you want.
Can you pretend to, Ian, for the podcast?
Yes. So this is actually not great. The original GTA games are being delisted, and they're being replaced, you said, with...
The definitive edition.
Definitive edition ones.
Definitive.
So these obviously exist in physical form out there, but it's... It's not great to see. This reminds me of like the Star Wars shit, where you want to be able to access the version that you want to get a hold of.
Didn't they do this with one of the Halo games, like Halo 2? Didn't they do it with, like, with some of the Halo stuff?
Well, Halo has an anniversary edition, and Halo, and then there's the Master Chief Collection that has like kind of enhanced versions of all of them. But yeah, so this is just going to make it harder to get a hold of the original versions. And who knows? For digital in the future. And people may not like these editions. They may not like the changes. I wish there was always just a way to be able to get the original version of something in addition to the enhanced version. Because enhancing something is 100% going to be subjective
Yeah, and, graphical upgrade, sure, but maybe I like the original graphics. Maybe it's kitschy to me, and I like that look. I like the PS2 ever look.
I don't think this will be necessarily as bad as something like, not being able to get the original version of Star Wars anywhere. But
sure.
it's worrisome.
Sure. Set for, according to this, Video Games Chronicle, remaster set for December boxed release. It's going to be $70.
Well, there's also that. I mean, they're forcing you to pay more for these newer versions, so you can't get the older ones.
Yeah, and
so as a money grab, it's kind of.
I understand it. These companies put in time and money to put these out. It's not free. It's not charity. But I don't know. Maybe bundle the original with it. Give people an option to have both. Like maybe do that. This is a legality thing. They can't do that. It's just not good. I don't want to live in a time where you cannot. Easily 50 years from now, be like, oh, I want to go back to the original classic, Grand Theft Auto 3.
Even just for comparison.
But like, they don't, that's the thing. That's why people are so pissed about the Star Wars thing. You're trying to wipe it from existence.
Right.
Like, have it available. If you want to do your, 14th version, George, which thankfully now it's finally out of your hands, have the original one available still. It'd be like all the awful, recoloring of the old movies that Turner tried to do and try to get rid of the original black and whites. Like, okay, you want to do the awful coloring, which thankfully almost everyone was up in arms about.
Because it looks like shit.
It's like, that's not how they were shot. Keep the originals there. Like, it's never bad to have more versions of something available. So what does it cost to get the older ones? Like 20, 30 bucks? What does it cost? I got to look that up. Like, but yeah, not 70, I'm guessing.
Right.
For that. All right. Well, there you go. At least we get a GTA on Switch, right? We get a new GTA on Switch, I predicted. That's interesting. Best Buy is charging for PS5 stock access. This comes from Ars Technica, our pals at Ars Technica. So they have an annual 200-year membership. And Best Buy always had a membership, right? On a smaller scale.
Best Buy has had various membership programs in the past, and without even getting into this one, my response to Best Buy is fuck you, because they did a game one previously that they fucking dropped.
Oh, that's right. They dropped
within like no time at all because they realized they weren't making any money. Sure. Amazon was doing that thing for a little while where it was like giving the 20% off pre-orders to get people to go up there.
Yeah.
And everyone thought that it was going to be a forever thing that they needed to compete with.
Oh, no.
Best Buy made it. And then Amazon was like, this is really just so that we could kind of let people know that we're selling games now and you can
marketing.
Pre-order them. And we're not going to do this. So Best Buy and GameStop, had their... whatever they were at the time that was trying to compete, and they dropped it. So I don't whatever this is, I would tell people, granted, Best Buy accepted the terms and conditions of the people who joined, but I would not until that date hit. So even though they dropped the program, they still allowed people to receive those benefits. I would not trust Best Buy to keep this running.
It's so cynical, another time I use it, where you have to spend money to access a new item. To get like in the club to buy something new. I don't know if there's any anti-scalping thing involved with this. Maybe if that's a case where you got to spend $200. I mean, or maybe they see it like, well, all these scalpers are making all this extra money off them, so we're going to make $200 extra off of someone so the scalpers can't. Maybe that's like what the goal is, which is going to work out because a lot of people are going to do this to get this for Christmas, obviously. So it's a $200 annual service. Benefits like round-the-clock tech support. For what? Up to 2 years of protection on Best Buy purchases, okay, including Apple Care Plus insurance, which can cost $200 on its own. All right, if you're buying your Apple stuff at Best Buy, okay, and member discounted prices. But then they're throwing in exclusive access to the season's hardest to find products. The Best Buy retail site had the $500 disc drive model PS5s available for this is called Total Tech members to buy Monday morning with the consoles gated behind an exclusive access event paywall. Instead of selling out instantly, its stock lasted between 90 minutes and 2 hours, a relatively glacial sales pace compared to the insane demand for the hardware that consumers have faced since it hit stores last November. See what you did, scalpers? See what you assholes fucking did? So you're not getting the extra money now. Best Buy's getting it. So there you go. It's capitalism. I'm hoping they still have like a limit on how many you can get on. They have to from this paywall. Otherwise, scalpers will pay the $200 and just still get 1,000 with their bot. But I guess at least the extra clicks makes it harder maybe for the bots to get in there and to, scrape through the site and to auto do everything. That's what I'm guessing. God, Best Buy. I used to like you, Best Buy. You used to be my go-to. I used to prefer you over Circuit City back in the day in those wars that you had. I used to go to you sometimes for Black Friday events. I used to go there. I used to shop you. What do you think, Ian? Is it sort of like, kind of sucks?
Yeah, I'm not into it. Pay more money to get more to get access to them. It's the same as scalping. It's just it looks different.
It's just Best Buy getting the money.
Yeah, it just
which I guess is better. I mean, because honestly, you might be paying less overall, and you're going to be guaranteed a product from them, not a scalper. Who the fuck knows what happens?
Yeah, but if at the end I need to pay $700 to get that under the tree, it costs me $700. They're scalping their own shit.
But maybe there'll be other items. I can't put a positive spin on it. It sucks.
Yeah, it's dumb.
What's good though is Evercade's update. Just got
update
is out there. New OS update. New features, and I saw like they added some nice little features with more game descriptions. There's like overlays when you're playing, which are like a nice graphical overlays. And the one big thing that was missing, controller mapping, is now there. And that's it. That's all I thought was missing.
And that's coming to the handheld as well.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And there's a bunch of other stuff there. It looked like this is a major overhaul of it.
Yeah, the UI looks pretty slick.
So that's good. And unfortunately, the Versus, there's a slight delay on that.
So if I remember correctly what I read, if I'm interpreting correctly, there is going to be a delay of about 2 months getting it to the U.S. Because of shipping. So I think the U.S. and Canada is supposed to expect a two-month delay. It's a bummer. But, I always try to justify why I'm okay with some delays and why I'm not okay with others. This one is a product that is clearly coming out. They've already posted pictures of the system.
This is more of a shipping thing.
In boxes, wrapped, ready to go, on pallets. They have it. It's done. It's not, a pie-in-the-sky idea. It's actually coming. But, yeah, that is a bummer for people, especially who wanted it for Christmas. But there's only so much they can do with shipping right now.
They said Blazer Entertainment's Managing Director Andrew Byatt pointed to increased pressure that has affected lorry freight congestion at ports and shipping lines that get stuck around the world. Yeah, literally, like, there was an article I saw about, like, ports outside of L.A. There's, like, 100 ships waiting to get in. Like, there's not enough workers to offload the stuff. So, like, yeah, the stuff's gotten produced. It's just on ships, so you can't do much about that. So it looks like December for Europe, and then it looks like, January, November, European, and then an estimated release between December 8th and 17th for European stock. And then it was originally planned for early November. So that's pushed back a month, and then an extra month. January 14th is the current plan for US and Canada. So there you go. It's going to get there. They soldered them all together. They produced them. They went the production line. They all went down the conveyor belt in the boxes. They're there. I want to talk about this other Metroid Dread little thing real quick.
So Kotaku found themselves in some hot water.
Not shocking.
Again, this past week. I think there was a lot of pearl clutching on both sides, but I do see where some people are coming from on this. So they ran an article called Metroid Dread is already running on Switch emulators. Subhead is only days after release, the latest entry, Nintendo's classic franchise is running in 4K using an emulator. I did not read the original version of the article. I'm going to jump real quick to the end where they talk about an update. They said an earlier version of the story was understood by many readers to be a direct suggestion to illegally download this just released game. I have not read that version. I don't know what it said. The version that's up here does not really suggest that. However, here's my statement on this. Emulation in general. I'm 100% for emulation. Love emulation. Love emulators, love ROMs. Extremely important to, and this is key, preservation of games. And yes, as I've said before, and this is an instance where Pat and I slightly disagree. If you don't have something out there, if I like to support creators, especially if the original creator is going to be supported by what I am purchasing. If you have a way for me to buy something from you, whether it be a movie, music, a game, I am almost 100% guaranteed going to give you the cash for it, music, etc. If you do not give me a way to purchase it from you, I am going to go find it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go find it. It's out there.
Wait, what do we disagree on there?
I believe in access. You don't.
No, I don't. I don't think access is like the right of every person constantly over every iteration of hardware.
Whereas I kind of do. I will say this, though. The Kotaku article, timing-wise, optically, is really fucking bad and really stupid. Just stupid to run it and not expect a backlash. They talk about how they think their readers are adults. Yes, but what you are also doing here, which is where a lot of this backlash is coming from, is you are talking about a game that just came out in a series that has not had an entry in, 15 years? 16 years? 14? Whatever. It's been a long, long time. Maybe 10 whenever Metroid Other M came out. It's been a while. People have fought for it, and to immediately talk about emulating it after it comes out is kind of a slap in the face to developers, I think, who worked very hard on it. Like I said, yeah. I am very much for supporting developers. If you are a Metroid fan and you want Metroid games to continue, and this is just what it comes down to, and I saw Mike Drucker, who I think is very funny on Twitter, said the same thing, and even he got backlash from it, but it's the truth. At the end of the day, if you want more Metroid games, you got to buy them.
Yeah.
And you got to look like you're excited about them. Talking about emulating it 2 days after it came out, I don't care if it's in 4K. I don't care if you're upset that Nintendo hasn't released a pro system. Support the developers of the game. Support them.
I have to point out, this article is by Zach Zuizen, who also did the great Miko article, running it down about a month ago. So my main takeaway is this.
He's written some good articles. I just think the timing on this is real fucking poor.
My takeaway is this. Who are you servicing by writing this article like this? This game just comes out. People were wanting a Metroid like this. Like, how do you benefit the readers, your readership, by telling them it's already running on Switch emulators? It would be like a movie news site telling everyone where to get the pirated movie, the new James Bond movie just came out. Like, that's like,
a movie site just reminding people, hey, by the way, Pirate Bay exists.
It's just like, what business do you want to be in at that point? Like, are you in the business of your readership pirating brand new? This isn't pirating stuff like 20 years ago. I have no problem with. You want to emulate something from the Genesis or from whatever, from TurboGrafx, go for it. But like, this is brand new. This just came out. I've never seen an article like this before from a major game journalism site to say like, hey, it's running great on this emulator. I didn't even know the state of Switch emulators. You know why? I shouldn't need to know, because I'm playing the system. I have like it's current. Like, this is something you might worry about, you know, 20 years later, right? 15 years later.
Right.
Like this shouldn't be a top priority, at least right now. Like, it's just a weird angle to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, why? What purpose are you serving by doing it? The video that they're embedding here was blocked by Nintendo. Was that? I guess that was it. Probably being shown playing on the emulator.
I think it was probably shown. Yeah, running in 4K.
Because Nintendo's like, we're gonna lose a fuck ton of money. You know?
No. Now here's the thing. I don't think Nintendo's gonna lose a fuck ton of money.
Well, that's their thinking in blocking it.
Yes, but I don't. That's the other thing. I actually, and like I said, I worked in retail, video game retail, for 15 years. I don't think piracy is actually going to take a significant dent out of this. I don't think most pirates weren't going to buy it anyway. But I still think optically it's just very fucking strange to run it 2 days after. So websites like these all the time complain about old series that, you know, companies don't bring back, and then they bring one back, and then immediately they're talking about emulate. You can't do that.
This is how the article originally ends. There are so many good reasons to be grateful for pirates, emulators, modders, and hackers. Absolutely.
Yes.
For doing what so many big publishers won't, keeping old games alive. But then Zach says, clearly that's not the case for Metroid Dread, a brand new game. Then why write the article about it? Like, what? Like, again, who are you serving? And then finally, he ends with, but this is an enormous issue Nintendo has to face given the relative technical inferiority of its current console. I don't understand that angle. What does one have to do with the other? What is the technical inferiority of the
consoles
have to do with?
Because you can emulate it at 4K and their systems don't. So that's where they're trying to. But I don't buy that.
I don't. That to me seems like a really weird excuse.
That's a stretch or an excuse
for piracy.
To me. Yes. Oh, well, they won't let me do it in 4K, so I'm going to pirate it.
So I'm going to do it on my much more
expensive
PC?
It doesn't have to be piracy. They mentioned you buy it, but still, it's just, like I said, it's how it looks. It was very bad looking.
Their update said an earlier version of this story was understood by many readers to be a direct.
Yeah, that's what I read.
We regret this interpretation, but how am I going to interpret it otherwise? Because
I don't think we've seen that version. That's what I'm saying.
But
that's how the what you just read is how the actual article still ends.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, I don't know. It's a weird article, and
At the end of the day, it sounds like I want to switch pro and I'm angry about it.
Yeah, how else can it come off when it says this isn't the case? Why would you? Yeah.
Obviously, that's just how I read it.
Yeah. I don't have much more to say about it, but
nope.
It's a miss right here.
Yep.
It's not to say that enough people are going to pirate this that it won't make enough money for them to do another Metro game or a sequel, but it does not look good as a major.
No, it looks bad as a game site.
It just does. So there you go, Kotaku. Once I thought it was out, you pulled me back in.
We win one, we lose one. We win one, we lose one.
This portion of the CU podcast is sponsored by Retrobit.
Retrobit has partnered up with Elden Pixels, an indie game developer, to publish the NES version of their game, Always Awakening. Originally released on Steam for PC, here you get to see what happens after that version. There are new rooms to explore, new challenges, and so much more. In true Retrobit fashion, they have made it into a collector's edition that comes with plenty of exclusive collectibles. On top of their high-quality work, this Always Awakening game was remastered to fit the NES perfectly. They've actually taken the game and had to rework the whole thing specifically for this release. So you know you're getting some quality old-school gameplay right there. In Always Awakening, you traverse dangerous dungeons, meet interesting and fun characters, and explore the world in this 8-bit adventure game. And in true Retrobit fashion, they are doing something totally different in what you don't see other companies doing. They are making what they call a digital version of Always Awakening that combines aspects of both physical and digital games.
In this digital, the collectible and retractable Zoe 8GB USB contains the ROM, but still includes exclusive extras and displayable packaging, all in order to provide a digital experience while continuing to support these indie game developers. How great is that? But if you want to keep it old school and stick to the classics, there's also the NES version available that comes with all kinds of collectibles, including a full-colored manual, just like we remember. Whichever way you're planning to go, right now is the time to reserve yours as they are available for pre-order now until October 17th. Visit retro-bit.com/always-awakening to see all the places offering both versions while they are available. And follow them on social media at Retrobit Gaming to stay updated on all their new releases. All right, Ian.
Yes.
It was a banner day, October 10th, 2021. It was finally revealed. The Intellivision Amico physical games. I mean physical products were revealed. On the Intellivision Amico YouTube channel, I received an email. I'm on the mailing list. There was also YouTubers talking about them with their exclusive access because they're friends with Tommy. They're talking about the exclusive Intellivision Amico physical products. Most of the feedback was a puzzling sort of look. Speaking of Kotaku, they were puzzled. Intellivision is selling NFT consoles for a game, NFT games for a console that ain't even out yet. The same on another site I saw. So what are these physical products? They are exactly what most people, including us, predicted them to be. What you get is a little cardboard box with the artwork that they revealed before. You get a collector coin, which people like us predicted you'd get a coin. You get a lenticular.
We predicted a trinket, and you get a and you get a coin.
I think I predicted a coin. I think I said coin. I'm gonna take credit. Get a coin.
I don't think you did.
Okay, you get a coin. You get a lenticular card of the artwork. You remember those lenticular, baseball cards they used to have in cards where you go back and forth. And you get what everyone said it was gonna be, an RFID card that enables you to download the game to your console to play. when the console is eventually released and when the game is eventually finished.
To code in a box is the trinket, which is what we said it was going to be the whole time. That's really all that needs to be said. It's fucking stupid. You can argue that it's not a code in the box all you want. It's simply just a delivery method. It is an RFID chip that is holding probably a 6-digit code or an 8-digit code. When you tap it to your Miko, which, by the way, they can't show you working because they don't have a functioning fucking system or ecosystem yet. And then it downloads the game. And then, because Tommy is not one to miss out on buzzwords or hype, when we have no idea, he's still doubling down on that. This is going to somehow mint an NFT onto your system.
From a blockchain.
We don't know what blockchain. We don't know how transferring of these licenses is going to occur. Because, frankly, I don't think he fucking knows. I think this is desperation setting in, and he needs to move units. And to that point... they are desperately in need of money because you cannot buy these by the piece.
First off, we were exactly right when we predicted they're going to sell these immediately. Yeah. They weren't waiting for the console to come out. They need money. So they are selling them immediately.
Because people were clamoring for it. No one was clamoring for it. Your 100 close friends who will tell you anything you want to hear said, Tommy, we'll give you some money in exchange for these boxes.
Yeah. So we've predicted everything. I did not predict that you could not buy these individually at $19.99.
No, I could not see that.
I thought that they'd be like, okay, buy whatever you want. You want to buy Moon Patrol and Finnick and Fox, that's fine. You want to buy Biplanes and Dynablaster, okay. They are forcing you to buy packs of four at a time for these.
Because 20 is not worth their money. They need the
80.
Big bucks.
They need 80 for you. If you buy all eight, you get $10 off. You get them for $150. Oh, that's fun. They need $80 from you at least for the promise, which we'll get into. These aren't game licenses at this point. For the promise of being able to download a game in the far off future, we don't know about when the game console is done. And it's cynical. It is exactly what we thought was going to happen. It's disgusting because you are, in essence, crowdfunding the company to keep continuing its life, to hopefully get to the console and to finish the game development, to play the games that you might be able to access with what you just purchased. That's what this is.
For a system that has been delayed 3 times and was supposedly on the launch pad last year, but you still can't actually see this physical game activating on a console.
And they're still trying to hire people to do work on the console to get it to fully function and for the ecosystem and for the e-commerce and things of that nature. We talked about the job listings a few weeks ago. So we don't know if these games are finished. Like, we don't know if the games are finished.
Well, they're selling you a copy of Moon Patrol that, as we saw 2 weeks ago, still has filler text.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, it had N64 Star Fox text in the game. But you can buy the promise of playing that game at some point. Obviously, people are like, what is this? What's going on? And the NFT thing, some people were trying to spin it as a positive thing. The only semi-positive article about this was on Nintendo Life saying they're admitting like, oh, it's strange, you know, to sell, you know, games to a console that's not out yet. But, you know, this NFT thing might be interesting. And I guess the theory will be you'll be able to transfer ownership. You'd be able to, like, on the blockchain, transfer the ownership digitally to someone else. I guess if you transfer the car to someone else. But, like, that brings up so many other issues. First off, to download these games, the server's got to be online. It's not physical media. You got to download the servers, right, if they're online. Then if you got to transfer ownership in the future, there's got to be – the blockchain has to be online somewhere
right,
for that to happen. We don't know what it's going to be attached to, what format. So you're creating so much more technical complications for a console that was supposed to be simple. One of the four buzzwords, simple, you know, affordable. This isn't simple. This isn't like a grandma sort of thing that she has to worry about. But then you can say, well, Pat, this isn't for them. This is for the collectors that grew up with the Intellivision, a 40-year-old console. Okay, that's fine. You're not giving them physical media, though. You're giving them an RFID card that looks like the crappy old Intellivision cards that had no artwork at all, which they are mimicking here. You know, one of the few retro consoles that had no artwork like this, the Master System, just has, you know, like a colored label, like a red label with like block letters on it. I understand that. But again, you are trying to keep the company alive by buying these and purchasing these.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
You're believing another promise from a company that has lied to you multiple, multiple times. I will say about the Nintendo Life article, Thomas Whitehead, I did read the article, and I don't think the article was quite as usually fluffy as the articles from Nintendo Life are. There are some concerns about the eco-impact of NFTs. But what I do think is weird is that Damian McFerrin,
the Nintendo Life editor,
is in the comments over defending this. And it's weird. It's a weird look to see. In response to something that someone said, similar to what you had said, basically, I would love for people to figure out a way to buy and sell and move rights for digital games. I think it would be a good thing to see at some point.
Sure.
But like you said, you still need that network to be up. This is not a solution to preservation, and it's not a solution to digital games. So someone said, once the servers are shut down, the physical media is useless. It's no better or more physical than a digital library with Sony, Microsoft, or Steam. Damien replies, that's certainly true of the servers, but at the moment, you can't exchange digital games on any other platform. So this approach is different, irrespective of what you think of the Amico or Tommy. And you can't do it on the Amico because it's not a fucking thing that exists yet. They're taking it as word, as gospel, that this... you have no proof that any of this is actually happening.
Jamie R. says, this system will probably never come out. Also, why report this on a Nintendo website? Damian McFerrin responds, we've been following this since it was first confirmed that more than one former Nintendo executive was involved with the system. Damian, you might want to do some research on that and see if that still, you know, was actually a real thing or just they just got people in front of a camera. You might want to look into some of these details. You're the editor of Nintendo Life. Plus, this is an interesting approach that could have wider ramifications for digital purchase on other systems, including Nintendo's. I don't see Nintendo going into NFT territory anytime soon.
Well, and it could, but let's let the company that has not held up any promise yet.
Let's see them actually fulfill something.
Let's see them fulfill something.
Sure, it's just bizarre. It's just I'm not sure why he's caping for Tommy Tallarico in the Intellivision Amico so hard. And he's come after us not behind the scenes, for us being critical in the past. So there's something going on here. I just don't know what it is. A personal friendship? Did he get it riding Tommy's car as well? I have no idea.
No, he said in another comment that he has not had a ride.
He's not had a ride.
He's not had a ride in the Ferrari yet.
Okay, that's.
He has not received a shirt either.
Has not received a shirt yet. But the response overall has not been positive.
No.
John Riggs did a video about this, revealing it. He got this on 1010. He's friends with Tommy. He got early access to this. He got insider info. And the top comments are just like, many people, including television fans, have argued that it should not have been called physical media, which was done by Intellivision way back when.
Yes, and that's what I was going to say. I like John, and Tommy. I'm not going to really get into this any further than this, but John, it was Tommy who said this was physical media.
For years, up until the last, four months.
3-4 months, yes. He finally got it through his head that wasn't going to fly.
You can't
and
leave.
Started changing his definition. But John, he said physical media.
It was on the website. It was on the website. He came after Ian originally, because Ian said way back, I don't think there's physical media on this. And he attacked Ian for saying that.
And there's also an interview that shows where he says previously that it's going to be SD cards or something like that. There's an interview where like he's talking about how there's an SD card slot on the back. So, yes, this was supposed to be physical media at some point.
From Dracovania. So, basically, they're selling cardboard with the promise of games that aren't even finished for a console that's indefinitely delayed. In bundles of $80 minimum, Soldier Boy will be proud. This is the only reason I'm reading this. It's not self-indulgent. It's one of the top comments. The only good thing that will come from the Amico are the Tommy voicemails and Pat the Ace Punk's channel that come in weekly. They're all hilarious. I look forward to a new one every week. You can bring it to a friend's house, like someone else you know would actually have one. It's not good. And then Tommy actually did say, they said, did you see the video with him and John Alvarado, the engineer? Poor John has to put up with Tommy. They think they said something like, if you worry about Amico not existing, they'll have side servers or something to keep the ecosystem alive.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not just something he pulled out of his ass.
Sure.
Side servers. Sure.
It's like a side dish. Someone said, this is physical in the most shallow and empty way. How disappointing. I'd rather have cartridges in the actual style of the original games. They mentioned the cardboard is biodegradable in that video for some reason. which is just weird. Someone said that's good because they'll probably end up in dumpsters. But it was bizarre.
I saw in a comment section somewhere someone tried to defend it by saying, "Well, it's weird to talk about how the packaging is." It's weird to talk about how the packaging is biodegradable for something that is supposed to be a collector's edition.
That is true. I mean, technically, isn't all cardboard biodegradable at some point?
It's also weird to talk about how your packaging is environmentally friendly and then immediately jump into talking about NFTs. I mean, just fucking tone deafness.
That is true, too. That is
just
true.
Just absolute tone deafness.
Talk about tone deafness. Did you see what Tommy said like in the first 10 seconds of the video for his family-friendly console? He had a 7 reference. He said, "Well, what's in the box?" So tone deaf. I'm not going to harp on this. I'm not.
I don't harp on this. I don't really care about the family-friendly shit.
But in theory, the CEO of your family-friendly console should be making a reference to a hard R-rated movie that has to do with the decapitation of one of the main characters, wives in the movie. Not spoiling 7. It's been out for 23 years or so. But when I heard that, I'm just like, this is why you need a PR person running this. You don't have Reggie Fils-Aimé making references to horror movies while they're presenting their kid games to you.
7's more of a crime noir.
It's hard R, though. It's violent. Oh, it is. There's some graphic stuff.
Fucking amazing.
It's an amazing movie, by the way.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. Yeah, that was a big movie in high school. You see my point, though. You need a PR person. Well, I guess this, someone named Chris said, "Well, I guess I'm not getting an Amico, and if I pre-ordered it, I would be dropping my pre-order. This is not physical media, not even a manual. It's 100% digital. I'm not happy. Shame on you, Intelligent." I would argue they can't do a manual if some of these games aren't probably even finished yet.
Well, that's exactly it. They can't do a manual because that's going to change. And that is...
And plus, it's more money to do them.
But manuals, I mean, I feel like that's really... When people get a physical, that's really something that they want.
That's a bonus.
That's a big thing. Well, that goes a long way. When I talked about Evercade positively... in the past, one of the things I mentioned is that the cases are hard plastic clamshells. They're like the Genesis cases.
I got one right here.
Yeah.
Look at this.
They don't fall apart. And what's inside?
A nice manual.
Full color manual.
A nice manual. 15-page manual, full color. There's some effort to write these, obviously, and to do the layout. But this is what collectors appreciate.
Forget your coin.
Forget your lenticular fucking card. How about a manual? This is what we remember from games back in the day. There was no coins in games back in the 80s and 90s. We had manuals, Tommy. But we had manuals.
That's a really good point that you made that I didn't even think about. You can't write manuals for games that aren't finished.
No. If you don't have your fucking story done for, you know, the heavy lore, the deep lore of Moon Patrol, you can't do a manual.
Or maybe it's because all the games, like the instructions would take up 3 sentences.
But you see my point, though.
Yes. Eat fish.
If this is truly for the old school and television folks, you would have... a manual. Hell, maybe you'd have even the little keypad insert, something like that, just to be kitschy and cute. If you want to lean into it.
Say like a cling overlay or something like that. Like, this is cool shit that would have been far more
something
interesting.
Something for your awful controller to put on top of it. To really, if you're going to lean into the 40-year-old market, you know, all the people that are in their like late 40s to like late 50s by now, early 60s, that's what you would do. You got to ask me, Tommy. I'm here for free advice. You gave me your phone number. It's right here. You got your business card right next to me the last few years.
Someone
right
said here. Tommy tags us in his videos.
Yes. So in the,
speaking of free advertising.
Someone in the tags, there was a bunch of stuff, including aforementioned John Riggs. See Your Podcast is used in the Intellivision YouTube tags. That's like, it's like a hate fuck thing going on now, I think. Like, why would you do that? Like, I guess if you search for CU Podcast, I highly doubt the Intellivision videos will come up.
Sure.
The ones they want to see. Ours will come up. I don't think theirs would come up there. So here we're at. We're at now these people, and I'm not even trying to say you're not a bad person if you want to buy these. You want a trinket, that's fine. But understand what you are buying. You are not buying at this point a license to download the game. You go to the e-commerce policy on Intellivision site. This is hidden. This is not like when you buy the game. You have to go down their e-commerce policy page on Intellivision.com. Scroll to the bottom. Did you read this? Did you read this shit?
You read it. Yeah. It's bad.
By purchasing any collector's boxed edition bundles, you agree to understand what you are purchasing. What you are purchasing, a collector's item as described below. They're missing a word. What you are purchasing is a collector's item
get
described
a
as
copy
below.
Editor.
Can you get a WordTune account? For God's sake, get a copy editor.
For teams.
4 or 8 game titles, depending on which you choose, in the unique collector's box. Collector's box edition package. By the way, these first versions, the only thing that's the difference between these 50,000 and the rest, I think it says limited on the front, and that's it. They even said, like, that's why they're collector's edition. If they make more, it just won't say limited on the front. That's right. It. So each collector's box edition will have collector's packaging related to the game title. By the way, I have no problem with the art. I don't like the color scheme of that light blue with the white text on top. A little hard to read. I have no problem with the art. Eden said he liked some of the art.
I like that's most fine. Of the art, yeah.
You get collector's packaging, 1 collector's edition embossed metal coin related to the game's title. There's the Intellivision Running Man and all the frames, and you get a picture of the art piece of the title. 1 collector's edition lenticular trading card related to the game title. 1 RFID digital media card to download the game license when the game becomes available on the Intellivision Amico Game Shop. Dates to be determined. They reiterate here, for legality's sake, a physical good and not a software license to the game title until the game becomes available to be downloaded on the Intellivision Amico Game Shop. So technically, what you all just ordered was not technically a game license. They make that clear here. You got a physical product that might turn into the promise of getting the digital game later.
Maybe.
So what that means is, you're on the hook for this purchase. If this game never comes out, these games never come out.
Yeah, they've
you're
covered
done.
Their asses. If the games don't come out, then
you bought your product.
You have no recourse.
You bought your product. If one or more of these don't come out, well, you got your coin, you got your card for $80. I was going to say $20, but no, you at minimum spent $80 to get 4 games. How craven is that? How craven you have to buy these in bundles? These games aren't connected, really. In any way, they're all different genres. They're all, you know, like what?
It's like a loyalty test. How loyal are you? You don't have to put $150 down on my promises.
How many people truly wanted to buy all 4 of those for each bundle? I guess the dyed-in-the-wool people that were going to support this hardcore wanted every single one. That I did not see that coming. I did not see that level of desperate greed coming. We're going to force you to buy packs of 4.
I believe Tommy or Intellivision released some sales numbers and said that they sold like 150 of, like, I don't know. It was in the hundreds for what they sold.
Was that on Atari Age? Where was that on?
I don't remember where I saw it. It was linked to something somewhere.
Hundreds of bundles or hundreds of orders?
Like, yeah, it was like, I think it was like 150 something of, like, it was like mid hundreds, I think, for all, like, bundle 1, bundle 2, and all of them together.
So we'll say 500.
We'll say 500.
500 orders overall.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's about right.
That means you sold 500, Pat Meath. You sold thousands of games.
Yeah.
You sold thousands of games.
Thousands of potential games.
Thousands. The promise, because it's not a game license, the promise of it being converted into a game license. To download the game license when the game becomes available. Again, dates to be determined. Or dates to be announced. You're buying a physical good, not a software license to the game title. It says that. I mean, this is a first. That's a first for video games that maybe Danny McFarren can hone in on. You're buying a physical good and not a software license to the game.
Right.
Until we complete the game in the future when it comes out. People were trying to say that, like, well, there were some maybe PS4 games that you could pre-order before the system came out or the controller. But that's first of all, that's Sony. Putting out a huge product, and they have you know, decades of experience as a company. And
again, yeah. Stop comparing. Stop doing the what if with companies like Nintendo
or Sony.
Microsoft and Sony. It has nothing to do with being a fanboy. It has to do with them being companies that have been around for decades, and in some cases, centuries.
Billion-dollar
companies.
Over
a century.
Billion-dollar companies that have shipped hardware before.
Selling games a couple weeks early with the game on the media.
Nintendo never delayed a console 3 times and then... It was desperate enough for money to sell the promise of downloads of games. Sony never, you know, waffled on what their physical media actually was and then tried to sell you the pre-order. This is not a major video game company. This is an upstart company again when it comes down to it. It's an upstart. So I don't know. I guess they're going to make some money. Even if they sold all 50,000.
I think someone did the math. If they sold everything, I think they'd make like $1 million.
That's gross, but these don't cost much to weigh. These cost probably $1 to make these. RFID cards cost nothing. The cardboard costs nothing.
This could not have cost much.
Let me see if I can use my calculator here.
I would imagine that a premium metal coin to order is probably about as much as a metal pin.
Dollar?
Yeah.
I'd say less, 50 cents. I mean, bulk. These are bulk. Yes. No, it's $1 million.
Yeah.
It's $1 million. This company needs a hell of a lot more than that to keep running. If they got $1 million, say that was a profit to them. Okay, you're running a company for another 4 to 6 months, maybe. I don't know. Based upon your payroll, what you have going on, that doesn't really get you far. But this is desperation, obviously. They do not have investors to keep this. My opinion, they do not have investors to keep this company going or to produce this if this is the desperate tack they're going to.
I just can't stress enough. Two things. I cannot stress enough how much this is obviously a we need money very fast thing if you're selling it in packs.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think the NFT thing, that is the only thing that might be even remotely interesting if you're into NFTs, and I'm not, I think is just buzzwords that Tommy's throwing around and saying, figure it out later.
When you think of family and fun and friendly and safe, you think NFTs. That's what you think of,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Here it is. Here's the best comment. I butchered it. From X360 DevNerd, and we'll just end on this. The entire product is 100% biodegradable. Yeah, because they're all going to end up in the trash. That's. But maybe there'll be a collector market for it. Maybe there'll be scalpers in the future.
Oh, I'm sure there will be people. If this never comes out, there will be people in the future who want to buy these seals.
Sure, people.
I mean, because there's a collector for everything.
Sure, people try to buy the Mattel Hyperscan, and that only did about 20,000 or so, I think, units worldwide or something like that. So, if that was a major company, so people try to buy that after the fact, people try to buy this. It's just whether or not you're going to see a console come out soon.
If you're on a mission to be the best gift giver ever this year, it's never too early to start crossing off your list. Whether you're shopping for mom, dad, teenagers, in-laws, or your best friends, Uncommon Goods makes it easy to find remarkable and truly original gifts for anyone. Uncommon Goods wants your holiday season to be stress-free, so check out their selection of thousands of items today. They have a lot of interesting things on the website. For instance, they have this Be Happy peanut butter sampler that I saw.
Oh.
6 jars of gourmet weird peanut butter that honestly sounds like you could just eat it out of the jar with a spoon. We got stuff like peanut butter, cranberry, white chocolate, and dark chocolate. We got white chocolate and pretzel peanut butter.
That sounds incredible.
Does sound incredible. And they've got tons of other stuff too for your bar, your kitchen, games, everything.
Who knows what holiday shopping will look like this season, and the unique gifts at Uncommon Goods can sell out fast. So shop now and get it taken care of early. No matter what they are into, Uncommon Goods has the perfect gift. From art and jewelry to kitchen, home, and bar, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. Not the same lackluster gifts you can find just anywhere. They have stuff like create your own reel viewer. Remember those old ones from the 80s, those red things? You can just send them your own pics, and they'll come back with their own reel, and you can look at them. It's fantastic. I never heard of that before. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. I saw a karaoke microphone speaker that connects to your smartphone. I didn't know that existed. I didn't know that was a thing. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $2.5 million to date.
So to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/CU podcast. That's uncommongoods.com/CU podcast for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Every year, U.S. businesses waste over $400 billion. That's right, $400 billion. Because bad writing causes confusion, misses the mark, or just takes too long to get to the point. On the flip side, better writing also helps businesses win and impress customers, enhance brand perception, improve internal communication, and strengthen relationships with critical partners. Better, faster writing means better business, which is why your team needs WordTune for Teams.
Now, this is big, but for our listeners that want to improve their entire team's writing right now, WordTune Teams is 50% up. That's 50%. When I first tried WordTune, I was impressed that WordTune could understand the meaning, not just words, but also context. It felt like it was the future. It felt like I had an editor right next to me, assisting me in making my writing the best it could B, WordTune is going to improve you and your team's writing, help your efficiency, and help you just collaborate better.
WordTune improves writing efficiency up to 4 times. Better, faster writing means better business. WordTune improves performance on any project, everything from internal emails to press releases, sales outreach to customer service support, and so much more. You can use WordTune anywhere you're writing online, including Google Docs, Slack, Outlook Web, and WhatsApp.
And right now, our listeners can get 50% off WordTune for Teams at wordtune.com/CU podcast. If you want to see the benefit of WordTune, you can try WordTune for free at wordtune.com/CU podcast. That's WORDTUNE. But this 50% discount is only available for a limited time and only for Teams. You might never see a discount like this again. Your team can start writing better right away for 50% off. That's half price at wordtune.com/CU podcast. All right, Ian.
Pat.
I just went to too many games in Oaks, PA.
Yeah, you did.
Sorry?
Yeah, you did.
I yated?
I said, yeah, you did.
Oh, okay. And I saw a lot of video game vendors that were there, as well as several, maybe 8 or so, that had a lot of graded games. And, of course, we expected in the past couple years, a lot's happened in the last couple years since we had conventions, graded games blowing up. Heritage Auctions was there. Golden Auctions was there, who just started getting into video games. Comic Connect, which is another one we usually talk about, they were there to show off games. And Tikasan actually talked to one of the guys that runs it, very nice fellow. CGC was at Too Many Games. They're going to start grading games next year as well to compete with WADA. WADA pulled out of the event for reasons, I guess, but they were all there. So obviously I wasn't looking at all the graded games. That's not my cup of tea, but there were people there that were selling stuff, and Familiar Face was here in the past talking about it. And there are some people that actually collect graded games, don't get me wrong. But my focus at the event was on the prices. I always track the prices, as I did 2 years ago, before this all went to shit the world, the prices of retro games in general. And 2 years ago, even you want to say 3 years ago, we both noticed, you know, the prices of you know, 16 and 8-bit games were dropping to a degree. And not just that, it seemed like the interest was dissipating on a lot of the stuff. I remember you pointing out to me from one commission, I think it was PRG a few years ago, how there was an Earthbound that sat there all week and no one bought, for example.
Sure.
It was just in the case, no one bought it. And then 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, people all would have bought Earthbound right away.
Well, as I've said before, I think a lot of the times it's because, you know, there's a finite market for this. It's like when you go to the conventions, it's like if it's the third time you've brought a book to the convention, you don't expect to sell so many because the people who would want it have it. You know, there was a time at Luna where an Earthbound would come in and, you know, sit in the case for, you know, half a day. And, you know, now the last Earthbound we had, you know, priced fairly at, you know, market value, sat there for a month and a half because the people who are looking for it already have what they want. One thing I noticed about, you know, when you posted a picture from the convention was I looked immediately at the prices.
Which, by the way, wasn't that when I threw that picture, that was not even, I was in focusing on the prices, by the way. It was Danny Sullivan.
It was Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat, yeah. But off to the side.
I'm going
to
see what was actually in that picture.
To the left of it, there was a Castellion that was priced at 30 and an Excitebike priced at $25.
I'm looking at it now.
I mean, Excitebike is just one of those games where, like,
dirt common.
I mean, extremely common. It's one that people want, but, like, it's not even one that sells out particularly frequently. Like, at Luna, we usually have 3 or 4 copies. It's never, like, in a ton of them, but we always have them. I think at Luna, it's, like, a $10 game. I keep saying we, like, I work there.
Pokemon Stadium was 30 on here, and I'm just, I didn't get all the prices on here, but okay. I see what you're saying.
So, I mean, I looked into it, and Castellion, there are some higher-end eBay prices that went for that, but auctions were ending at 15. I saw plenty of buy-it-nows for Castellion in the $18 to $22 range that sold. And I know that it's weird. It's hard for me to say. I don't think prices of popular games, truly rare games, are going to come down as fast as everyone thinks they will. When we entered the pandemic, and I was even guilty of this for a little bit, prices of things shot up because we were bored.
We were bored. People had stimulus checks. There was extra unemployment. There was more expendable income for some people.
Stuff to do. So the prices went up on these things. And because they were in high demand. That's how it works. But, and I think a lot of those games, because, I mean, this is how, you know, markets work. People who paid a lot of money for this aren't going to want to let these things go for, you know, an immediately cheaper price a year later. I think a lot of some of these rarities, PlayStation 1 games, PlayStation 2 games, things that jumped up, I think it's going to take a while for these prices to level out if they ever do. A lot of times prices don't really revert, and they, or if they do, they don't revert quickly. But I do think that this weird, because, I mean, we saw it at Luna. There are some, I don't think this whole pumping up every title in the NES catalog or the Super Nintendo, raising all those prices again, is going to stand. It just can't. It can't.
So again, historically, we go back to around the fall of around 2000, excuse me, the summer of 2016 was the peak for a lot of stuff. You look at price charting, it's there. People try to argue me on Twitter. I'm like, look at price charting. A game like Contra, according to price charting, peaked at $48 June 2016. It then fell tremendously over the next 3 years to the low point on here was, looks like end of 2019, about 18 and change, right?
Right.
And then you see in 2019, it starts going back up. And now it's up to 35. It's almost regained all of it after taking a 3 year sort of drop of about like half. It went down over half. That's like a 60% drop in price. And that happened to a lot of those games. And I saw in 2019, I went to about 8 conventions in 2019, 9 conventions. That was the first time I saw ever. I saw Super Nintendo games sit. But I saw NES games sit that were the coveted ones. A vendor at PRG 2019 had like the Power Blade 2. He'd have like the Bonk. He'd have like those like $300 games, $200 to $400 games that collectors are into those. Those are hard to find and good. End of the weekend, I said to him, have you, these really sell? He said, no, they haven't. They were just sitting all there.
Right.
So I told you that is done for now. Like, they're not as coveted for that price. The people that want them at that price already got them. There's not any new collectors to come in and to get them. And that was also the first year in 2019. I went to a few conventions where I saw, for the first time ever in doing this, dollar NES boxes. Dollar. I'm not lying. Dollar NES boxes. I mean, they weren't just all sports games. Some were sports games. They weren't all. Dollar NES boxes.
Top Gun, I bet you. Stuff Bayou like Billy. That.
And RoboCop, I even saw. $2, 3 for $5 boxes. Stuff like that. That's how these were priced like 15 years ago. Like back then.
Sure.
And I saw that come to that point. So obviously, COVID, the pandemic, economic factors, which I briefly mentioned, have turned things topsy-turvy. We've had, you know, the rise of meme stocks, NFTs, card collecting has gone through the roof with sports and non-sports cards with Pokemon and Magic. So people are looking to spend on something, not just to have fun with, but to like, not necessarily get rich quick, but they're caught up in all this right now. We see this all over the place.
And I think with Nintendo specifically, going back to that picture, I think that's where you don't want to be right. What I want to get at is, while there was definitely a boost in prices all around because of the pandemic and because video game collecting once again got a shot in the arm from the pandemic and people, you know, looking for things to do, I still think the general pattern of interest waning as systems get older is going to happen. You're not magically going to suddenly find a bunch more people interested in NES stuff that weren't interested in it prior because of the pandemic. What's going to happen is I think that the prices that got raised and inflated because of the pandemic for systems that were already in line to become the next popular systems, PS2, PS1, that sort of stuff, those prices are going to stay higher longer. But the temporary inflation again of kind of no-name games on the NES, that's not going to last. That $30 Castellian, that's never going to move.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked at that when I heard that, because that's a game that only a collector trying to complete a set would want.
And that's, like I said, people got into collecting again because of the pandemic, but still with, like I said, you know what I'm saying?
They're getting aged out.
Yeah, you're getting aged out with Nintendo.
This could be the last hurrah for it.
Yes.
For the 8 and a lot of the 16-bit stuff.
I think that would have been I don't think we would even really be talking about Nintendo stuff being remotely popular at this convention right now if it wasn't for the pandemic.
But I saw crazy prices on Genesis stuff. I think I saw a Splatterhouse 3 cart only for a cart only. I saw for like 150. I think I bought that complete for like $70 like 4 years ago. So I'm not saying, of course, all these prices, you know, you're at a convention, you could have a little surcharge. But in general, I walked around looking like if I was into collecting this stuff, I wouldn't be able to collect this stuff. Right. I was priced out. And that's what I always think about when I bring this stuff up. When you get to the point when you start pricing out most people, that's when it's a bubble when it comes to stuff. When you get to a point where you want so much to buy this stuff, Ian, and you just can't anymore.
Yeah.
So you can't justify spending $150 for, you know, Splatterhouse 3 isn't easy to find. It ain't that rare, though, to cost that much. So, like, once you get to that point, you're going to have people say, well, I guess I just won't do it. I just won't buy it. I wouldn't spend $150 on that, you know?
No.
So, like, but I have it in my collection. So, like, even I, a few years ago, had that, okay, what's the point of reasonable amount that I'm spending here? And I'm in a position, fortunately, where I can spend a little bit more. Most people, they might think about, well, I'm on a budget for collecting this month. I can't do it. And that's what I keep coming back to. Because the problem is that all these games are a lot more money than they were 2 years ago, but everyone has for mostly the same game still. You have everyone having the same uncommon, hard to find, or semi-hard to find games, but a lot of them are still common, and everyone has them. Everyone has the same N64 games, NES games, for the most part, Genesis games, Super Nintendo games. If everyone all has the same stuff and all the prices are high everywhere, something has to give. They have to. I'm not even going to address like the GameCube games that we talk about shooting up into the stratosphere the past, you know, couple years. Maybe because that's just the time, you know, it's aged to that point where now it's retro for those
people. It was timing plus pandemic.
But for the stuff that's already seen the dip, for it to come back up, that can't be
the stuff that popped back up after a dip. I don't think that's going to stick around. The stuff that was coming up on its own anyway and got a boost from the pandemic, I think those are the prices that are going to take longest to come back down.
I kind of understand the stuff like maybe like, okay, maybe the Turbo games, they weren't made in large quantities. There was like three or four people that had Turbo games there. I always get excited because, you know, you don't see them that. And there was like one or two that had PC Engine stuff. But yes, for those popular systems, I just don't see it ending well. So I talked to one vendor. I mentioned that, yeah, I'm looking to sell a bunch of my stuff. I said that in the podcast before. I'm not going to sell all of it, but I'm going to sell a chunk of it. And I brought up like, you know, Kid Klown, for example. Brought up Kid Klown. I have it complete. I do not track the prices of stuff I have because I don't have a real reason to. I don't. But I said to him, you know, I have a Kid Klown complete in box. He said, I'll give you like $700 for that right now. This is a vendor telling me that in order to sell it for more. I looked at him like, what's going on? Like, what is happening?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's strange. Bizarre.
So I can't imagine, a lot of people might say in the future, you know, okay, maybe this is time to sell and we'll get out. The prices are too much. And if you don't have the person to replace it, again, also all comes back to the replacement theory. If you don't have the collector to replace the person getting out, that's one more of that game out in the wild that is out there that no one buys.
Well, it's kind of like you need confidence of the marketplace. I mean, when you look at an expensive game, I think most people who look at, say, let's just say Panzer Dragoon's 1,000 or 1,200.
I'll look it up right
now.
Whatever
the price it's going for, I think most people could probably look at it and be like, if I bought this, I could probably confidently resell it for this amount of money.
Because that one's a little bit harder to find.
Right. I think people need to feel confident in their purchase of these retro games to make that purchase in the first place. And I don't think anyone looking, not to go back and harp on it, but anyone looking at a $30 copy of Castellian is looking at being like, I would never be able to get $30 for this again.
Panzer Dragoon Saga looks like it's $13.50 right now in price charting. The last one just sold for $17.60. So there you go. So it's averaging. It's trending up though in that direction. It's just
should have bought that like three times by now.
Oh yeah, that came in your shop a few times. I remember you telling me about that. I got mine from Frank at Forgotten Freshness. I traded for some certain guidebooks. It was a trade from the seller, because I figured like there's no way I'm spending whatever at the time. I think it might have been worth $700 at the time or $600.
I wish I had spent $600 on it.
Would you have sold though for the profit or just because you want it so badly now it's harder to get?
No, I want it for. Well, she listens to this every once. So I want a copy for Bonnie.
Oh, okay. Anniversary present in the future.
I mean, Vani is not getting Panzer Dragoon Saga from me anytime soon.
I don't know. You got this cushy new job, you know? Who knows what happens? Be CEO in a few years, you know?
Yeah.
Be barking orders at people, throwing coffee mugs against the wall in anger. Anyway, so you see it in your store, obviously, this uptick in interest, not just to play the games, but also to collect. Is there a time you think where we'll go back to pre-COVID prices?
Like, no, I think even
it'll take a bit.
I think I think even talking about pre-COVID prices is kind of dumb because there's never going to be a pre-COVID again. We're just not going to get there
for the prices, or just.
I mean, the prices will eventually come down on their own, but we're not going to magically just hit a post-COVID point.
No,
it's not going to happen. And like I said, I think a lot of these prices are maybe going to stay high. Because it's just becoming a more money game. I don't think stuff like Nintendo prices, I don't think Nintendo, Super Nintendo, I don't necessarily think Genesis, with the exception of select key games, I don't think the general raising of the floor again is going to stay. I think that will probably,
okay, yeah.
I think 2 years, you're going to see that go
90% away.
90% of them will come. I think a lot of that Nintendo stuff is going to go back down again. You're going to see Castellian for $10. You know.
So pre-COVID, that's what you'll get. 90% of them will come back to pre-COVID.
Okay, I guess I just take issue with the terminology. Everyone's waiting for things to go back to how they were before, and we're just never going to get there.
I'm talking about the prices, the price points. We'll just say the prices, how they were in fall 2019.
I think the majority of the COVID bump will fall apart within a couple of years for the older games.
Okay, and then for the graded stuff, again, that's a whole other conversation that's not fully related. Some of the complete in box is related. It's dragged some of the complete in box up with it, which I was wrong about. I will admit, I was wrong. I did not see the sealed market affecting the complete in box market to the degree it has. I did not see a complete in box early print run of Legend of Zelda going for over $1,000. Cause to me, there's just too many of them out there. I did not see, you know, a Mike Tyson's Punch Out, even a semi high grade complete in box going for like whatever, $1,500. I did not see a game going from like $100 to.
Are you talking about graded ones?
Ones that end up being graded. I mean,
oh, okay. Yeah.
It hasn't
affected the loose market.
No.
I mean the loose complete market, if that loose makes complete, sense.
Ungraded market.
The ungraded market.
Yeah, but now in theory, though, I think it probably has if I look it up. I'll look up Mike Tyson real quick as we close out this segment. If you have anything else to add.
No, I don't.
Okay, well then I'm going to close out the segment. Complete in box price for Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Let's say, well, 5-screw. That'd be super, super early. But about $250. That's still a lot higher than what it was a few years ago.
Complete in box?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. I mean, the last one we had that we sold was probably 80.
In the fall of 2019, it was at $100. That sounds about right. And now.
But it's maybe for 5-screw.
And now it's at $265 about. $250. So it's gone up one and a half times. It's 2.5 times the value of what it was. That's unnatural, sort of swing that quickly for a game that sort of stabilized, you know, at a certain point in time. All right, that's it. We'll do the update. We'll see you for the State of Retro Game Collecting 2023. So we do this every like 2 years or so.
Yeah, thereabouts.
All right, it's time for Patreon Q&A, Ian. Ian, how do you access this CU Podcast Patreon?
You go to patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go, you check it out. You maybe throw us a little money. You get poll topics like this.
You get more. You get a bonus episode now.
Bonus episodes, full video podcast writings, which I am behind on. I will try to get to that today after work.
You get early access.
That's right.
We're going to start doing the voice messages will come up early there. And I want to thank everyone out there for supporting the Patreon. The month of September was the biggest, biggest Patreon month ever. Most successful Patreon. So thank you so much. We thank you for that. So this week's Patreon poll that you can vote on there as well. In second place, why do Pat and Ian talk about controversial topics? Which is not meaning that if that wins, we won't. It's just, you know, the theory around it. Why do we think it's important to talk about that? And in first place, at 78% with a bullet, the worst NES games ranked by professionals. So this comes from Seth Abramson, who is a political journalist, a junkie. He was famous for first uncovering the Russian collusion stuff. And he spun off and started talking about video games in the past few months. I thought that was funny because he grew up with them. He's a retro gamer. He listens to the podcast. He follows some of the stuff we do. So he was nice enough to, you know, send me the emails and stuff that's usually you have to be a subscriber of his to follow here. And so we're going to talk about this one. The 100 worst NES games, a definitive ranking compiled from over 50 outlets and experts, proof curated the findings of 52 industry outlets and experts into a single ranking. making this the largest ever consensus list of the worst video game consoles on the world's most beloved gaming console. So I've sent Seth my books before. I'm picturing maybe using websites like Worst of Lists and things like that in order to compile this. And obviously there's a star rating according to the book, which would be helpful as well. So this is from his writing here. Proof has decided to do a deep dive on this question and find out which games deserve the title of worst NES games ever. This result is the first ever worst 100 NES games published by US media outlet. The sources used to compile this consensus ranking range from major outlets, The Guardian, PBS and Vice, to industry stalwarts, Games Radar, Gamers, Ultimate Nintendo. From popular outlets for niche hobbyists, Cracked, Den of Geek and Gadget, Bleacher Report and Mojo, to they do compilation lists, to crowdsource data archives and well-regarded fan sites, the World History Project, Ranker, Spoonshiro, and FanPop. So a wide variety of different sorts. Some are like list compilers, some probably more erudite, Ian, right there. So we're going to be all tied with 25. We'll work our way down from all 25. We're going to start with... we'll start with 31, because there's a lot tied with 31. We'll do this last one. WF WrestleMania. Miserable game.
Absolutely awful. Controls that are basically...
broken.
Broken.
They're broken. They're broken. Broken. Broken.
Broken. The only good thing about it is the theme music in it, which yes. I think I actually stated in my review.
And that's a rare developed game. The Adventures of Gilligan Island, 25th. I do not think this game is that bad, having reviewed it for the guidebook. I think the story is nice. The mini stories you play, the controls are all right. I would not have ranked this as high as this. I did not give this a terrible rating in the book.
It's a Bandai game, right?
I believe so.
I think it's one of those ones that people just look at and go, it's got to be horrible.
They misunderstand it.
Yeah.
They misunderstand it. Oh, you have to have Gilligan stay close to the skipper. It's not, this would not have made my top 100 worst NES games list. I think I might have given it 2.5 or 3 stars, actually. The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle. It's
bad.
It's not a good game. It's not the worst game, but it's not a good game. Controls are horrible on this game.
Awful controls and typical shitty THQ era graphics that look like they should have been on, like, I don't know, a computer from 1987.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Video Adventure. I might have put this higher. This might make my top 5 or 6, actually, the more I think about it.
The isometric viewpoint is awful, and dialing anything is just a...
Yes, the mini game of dialing, I still don't understand exactly what I'm doing.
No, it's awful.
Muppet Adventure, Chaos of the Carnival. Did you review that one?
I might have. I would say this. I don't remember it being miserable. I remember it being very unmemorable.
Simpsons, Bart vs. the Space Mutants. It's not good.
It's not, but it's absolutely not one of the 25 worst games. I think the first level is actually very interesting. With the, you know, you gotta hit everything purple, and there's some puzzles like how you have to use the rocket to get the O and the Bolarama sign.
Sure.
I thought the first level was, while it did not control well, I thought it was a pretty interesting idea, and the rest of the game, had it played like that, could have been interesting. But I think starting the second level, it just turns into a normal, awful platformer.
Yeah. It's just, at that point, you're struggling with the controls.
Right.
For the most part. These are both wrestling games that are tied. I don't agree with one of these in particular. Tag Team Pro Wrestling and Muscle.
Tag Team Pro Wrestling is absolutely abysmal.
Yeah, that's the one where you use a list to select your move. It's bad. I like Muscle. Once you learn the small mechanics, I don't think it's horrible.
I tried. I think it's real bad.
I think it's all right. I got into it. I like the power-ups. There are special moves for the characters. I actually think there's the mechanics aren't terrible once you get into that. But I understand if you don't like it. The graphics are really simple.
Sort of
the little toys. So they're based on that. Athena is 17th here. Tied for 17th.
The NES version is not good.
What? But 17th worse? I think that could be...
I'd put it in the top 50.
Top 50, not 17th?
Yeah.
This is one that should have been top 5. Cheetah Men 2.
Yes. I mean,
it's a broken game.
Yeah, it's a broken game.
Broken game. Conan at 17th. Did you review that one?
I did, and I didn't. It controls like shit. It controls like absolute dog shit. But I think I found the game to be kind of interesting once I got to grips with it.
How about Hydlide next, tied for 17th?
Hydlide is not a great game, but I do kind of like Super Hydlide. I do think that Hydlide... See, this is interesting because he has a difficult games list that I agree with more that mm-hmm. I think he used the same methodology for. But I feel like a lot of these hard NES games, a lot of them are a lot of these worst games. I think a lot of them are misunderstood. Hydlide is not great, but it's a lot of why people hate it is because they don't know how to play it.
It's a port of a PC game.
Even if you know how to play Hydlide, yeah, it's not. amazing, but I think people bought it and thought it was supposed to be like a Zelda, and they don't get it, and they turn it off immediately because they go, haha, this game sucks, without trying to approach the game on its own terms.
It's more misunderstood.
Yes.
Little Red Hood. I almost say maybe you shouldn't put all these unlicensed games on here because you get tons of these ones. So then you have Little Red Hood, which I haven't played a lot. Operation Secret Storm, I reviewed. That's
bad.
Miserable, but all the Color Dreams games are miserable for the most part. I mean, then you get to one that I think is more misunderstood. This, to me, is more hard than worse. Silver Surfer. Silver Surfer, I think, technically is all right of a game. It is punishingly hard as a shooter, but it's not impossible. It's not impossible.
It's not.
But it is unfair. I will say that.
I don't like it because shooters are allowed to be hard. I play plenty of shooters that are extremely difficult, some that are more difficult than Silver Surfer. My problem with Silver Surfer is that the hitbox is freaking massive.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it on the worst because the music is fantastic. The graphics are pretty good. It's just like the difficulty is just too much on that. I like the fact that it's vertical and horizontal. That wouldn't make my worst NES games. This one may or may not, depending on my mood. Usually it's a shooter, according to Rue. Back to the Future at number 12 tied. I have a weird fondness for how wacky this game is and the mini games involved. Well, I don't think this would make my top 20 worst NES games. I actually didn't give it a horrible review.
I don't think it would for me either. If you look at... It's all I think about...
Expectations?
It's about expectations.
Yeah.
If you look at Back to the Future as any arcade game, if this had been released in the arcade, slightly better graphics, I think it would... better difficulty scaling. I don't think it would have been frowned upon because it is an arcade game structure. You dodge stuff and then you get mini games. And the mini games aren't awful in theory. Collision detection is not great on some of it. There are some problems just based with like on the actual coding, but the game itself is decent in theory. Ties itself to the movie well enough.
Yeah.
My biggest problem is that it's absolutely fucking grating to listen to.
Yeah, I didn't give it a horrible review. I didn't give it a glowing review, but
no.
The next one, though, I was Back to the Future 2 and 3. That's more miserable.
Oh, those are awful.
That's more miserable. Bad Street Brawler.
Really bad game.
Yeah. Barbie. Barbie is one that...
Barbie's interesting, though.
Barbie is one, yes. It's interesting, but when you look at it, okay, this is for maybe little kids, little girls to play. That they marketed to. I try to grade on that scale, and it's still bad. Oh, it's still bad.
Writer for the books, Christina Key, does she speedruns that game.
She did the original one?
Yeah.
Did not know that. I think she did all the Super Nintendo. She did the Super Nintendo review. Bible Adventures at 8. You know what? Excuse me, at 12th tied. I think there's a couple of the Bible Adventure games that are actually decent out of the set. That's more of one based upon reputation.
Right, and that's, again, it's reputation and haha, these Bible games exist. Uh-huh. And, I mean, that is funny, but honestly, they're not, of like the unlicensed games, they're not the worst.
No.
They're not the worst.
No, the Wisdom Tree ones actually, by and large, are better than most of the Color Dreams ones when you get into
it. Oh, absolutely.
Exodus and Joshua, the overhead
Spiritual
puzzle.
Warfare, the Zelda clone, they all play better than most of the unlicensed games.
Uh-oh, we have a bunch of movies, Hudson Hawk at 10.
It's bad. Not 10 bad, but it's bad.
And then Total Recall, which is always kind of lumped in because they're both like weird R-rated movies.
Yeah.
That got weird. Yeah. They're not great.
Hudson Hawk had interesting ideas. I always like to try to point that out during like the marathons. The first level incorporates like weird stealth stuff. It controls like shit, but definitely not the 10th worst game on the system.
This one I would put higher. I'd put this in the top 2 or 3. Dragon's Lair is miserable to play.
Oh, it is.
And the fact that...
And it's not broken. It's just miserable to play.
It's designed to be miserable to play. It's designed to be miserable. And it's like we want to make it as torturous as going to the arcade. Well, they didn't have to. They could have made like a little platformer.
Yeah.
A little platformer. You hit a guy, you know, use your sword to hit little creatures. And everyone would have been probably fine with that. And to have these like one hit death things like the arcade just did not translate, obviously. That would probably be my top one or two, more I think of it.
It's very bad.
Super Pitfall. Some people don't like it. I never got into it.
It's a bad game, but again, I think this is reputation and people wanted like a real Super Pitfall. I mean, Pitfall 1 and 2 are fun, great fucking games.
It's almost like it shouldn't have been
And Super
marketed.
Pitfall looks like, I mean, I don't even know how it got that name.
Well, it's Pitfall Harry, I guess, technically.
But
and it looks like Mario.
Yeah, I don't know about that level. It's bad.
But it's tied for 8th? Probably not. Ghostbusters tied for 6th. Yeah, Ghostbusters is bad.
The NES version's real bad. I tried to like it, so I like the Atari.
This one should be higher. Where's Waldo also tied with Ghostbusters?
Where's Waldo? Absolutely. Where's Waldo is probably my least favorite.
Okay, for me, I think I gave Dragon's Lair a bomb, I think, in the book. Only two games got a bomb. I gave Dragon's Lair a bomb. I mean, I could have given it a half star on a good day, but that game was just miserable to get through, the first even few screens.
For a person like me who's colorblind, Waldo is literal pain. Like, it's impossible to get through
but
that
even,
game.
You know, you can't tell what Waldo... When you click on him, it's like, wow, I still can't see him. Like, I don't see him still. There's no detail in it. Deadly Towers, I think that gets a bad rap, Deadly Towers. I don't think it's fourth, the worst tied.
Deadly Towers is... 100% not the fourth worst game. And while I loved reading Sean Baby in my youth,
he said he put it as his worst one.
Sean Baby was the person who started the whole Deadly Towers is the worst game ever. It's got fine music. Yes, it's weird. You're fighting blobs and slinkies and essentially, but it's really not that awful of a game. It's just unremarkable.
The next one I super disagree with. It's just a more difficult game. Friday the 13th is not the fourth worst NES game. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
No. It has any... the ideas present in Friday the 13th are good enough to just keep it out of the top 25.
And the controls are all right. It's just that people...
The map sucks.
Yeah, the map sucks. That's it.
The map sucks. And getting to where you need to be is oftentimes far harder or more impossible than it needs to be. It's not a great game in its current execution, but it's got great ideas that I think automatically disqualify it from a top 10 or top 20.
Yeah, honestly, if you just improved the map and the navigation, it might have been a beloved game.
It would have been. I'm still waiting for someone to take it and just do it right, because I think the skeleton of that game is very, very good.
And the music's good. The different characters.
There's something there.
It's one of the only dark NES games where it's like a horror.
Yeah.
Action 52. Absolutely. This is number three. Like, this is where like no one's going to have an argument with these top three. For some of them. The one might be a little controversial.
Actually, this number one, I think, is probably going to be a little tough for me. But go for it.
But you won't get a lot of arguments. But no. Action 52 is just broken.
Yeah.
It's absolutely broken. That's why I'm surprised like Cheetah Man isn't bundled with this, but Action 52 is worse because you get all these broken games that like should never have been published. We know why. They were high school kids that learned how to code like in a week and a half or whatever and made these games like in a month or whatever it was. It was nuts. Number two, the Uncanny X-Men. This definitely makes my top 10. I don't have a problem putting number two. You can beat this game. That's the thing. Like, I like to say, can you beat these games? Is that yes? You can beat Uncanny X-Men.
Uncanny X-Men would probably.
It's
would,
miserable.
I'm
though.
Fine putting it at two.
Oh no, it's bad.
It's a miserable.
I gave it a half star.
I think I actually mentioned this on Extra Napkins. It wasn't on here, but I know it was within the past 2 weeks. I mentioned that X-Men was the only rental game I ever rented where I was like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, it's.
I played it for like half an hour, and I was like, no, I'm gonna go outside.
And number one. Drumroll, made famous by ABGN, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I was looking at, the list got sent to me all weird, but I don't have a lot of experience with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's a bad game, sure.
It's an interesting concept. I think it's misunderstood. Yes, you walk way too slow as Dr. Jekyll, your cane does nothing, but there's a deeper message about being bothered by everyday life that's in there. I think they set out to do something more ambitious that the NES couldn't do.
Sure.
Potentially, but there's quirky stuff in it, like different bees that attack you. I would not put this number one. I would put Action 52 number one, or Dragon's Lair number one personally. This would probably be in the top 10. I would not put this number one though personally.
Yeah.
There's enough interesting things going on around it. Versus something like Action 52, where there's nothing interesting going on. You know?
X-Men might truly be my number one.
X-Men
would
be your number one? Versus Dragon Slayer? Those would be the top two.
If you put two in front of me and said I had to pop one in the system right now and try to mess with it, I would pick Dragon Slayer. Just because I think their design decisions in Dragon Slayer are bizarre. But I want to see the other screens. I don't ever need to play X-Men on the Nintendo ever again.
My worst ones are, in no order, I would do X-Men, Cheetah Man 2, Action 52, Where's Waldo?
Oh, and Where's Waldo?
And Dragon's Lair. Those would be my five. That's my five. In whatever order you want to do. Like those are the ones I got either a bomb or a half star in the book. And there are other like colored ones I got a half star. But again, those weren't official games. So like those got past Nintendo. You know,
right.
A lot of these, some of these bad ones.
Yeah.
Like, Where's Waldo got past Nintendo?
I don't want to take the time to think of a top five, but I would say Where's Waldo and X-Men would probably be... Where's Waldo, X-Men, and Dragon's Lair would probably be my top three.
All right. Thanks, Seth, for the list, and we'll probably cover more of your lists in the future. We got voice messages to listen to. Go to anchor.fm/ACU podcast, and you can listen to voice messages. We'll do a quicker one this week.
It's going to have to be quicker.
He's only got 15 minutes this week.
Hey, guys. It's Ellen again from New Zealand. Just wondering if you know what's happened with Rue and Clan of the Grey Wolf. I know, Pat, you're on an episode of Echo Screen Live, and that was a podcast I really enjoyed. So just wonder if you had any idea what those two guys are up to. Thanks a lot.
I'm not sure what is it Dan? I'm not sure what Dan's up to.
Just remember the Commodore, but yeah, I don't.
The Commodore. I think it's Dan. Yes, the Commodore. But Rue is living happy. He's developing his LED tech. And we talk on the phone like once or twice a year, and he's enjoyed his YouTube retirement.
Yeah, we usually see him at Portland.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Pat from Boston again. Question for the both of you: as a kid, did you like your lunch in a sack or a box, or was it called a bag or a pail? Thanks, guys.
A pail.
Keep up the good work.
No, we're not working on a high rise.
It would have been bagged lunch and boxed lunch. No pail, no sack.
Lunch box. You had like lunchbox. I had a Transformers lunch box.
I actually liked just taking my lunch in a paper sack.
The weird thing about the thermos, my mom put milk in there. I had milk with my sandwich.
Sometimes I did too, as a kid, that was always weird.
So you had like 3 hours to eat it. Like, we had lunch pretty early. When you were a kid, you had lunch at like 10:30, because we got it at like 2:00. Catholic school. Sometimes it was still cool. Sometimes a little bit lost the coolness. You don't want to drink room temperature milk, but you had to.
Yeah.
But most of the time, the thermoses kept it cool for a few hours.
Yeah, thermoses, they did what they needed to.
It sucked that when it cracked the one time, it would drip out. Sometimes I'd open up and it'd be like a little soggy.
Every once in a while, my mom would draw my lunch bags. I liked that.
Oh. Just Transformers. Why did I have a Transformers lunchbox and not G.I. Joe when I like G.I. Joe a lot more?
I did have that Mario Brothers Zelda 2 lunchbox when I was
a kid. I had
the
Mario 2 one somewhere in here.
No, the red one.
You had one that was both. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
All right. I think you do too.
I think I do too. All right. Next.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Doug from the Reset and Rewind podcast, a show where we talk about every video game movie in chronological order. My question for you guys is, what is your... Okay. favorite movie based on a video game? Also, what is the worst one you've seen? Love your podcast, and hope you'll check out the Reset and Rewind podcast. I'm off to play some Pokemon Plantum.
Best video game movie? Sonic the Hedgehog. Worst video game movie?
Any of the rest? I don't know.
I haven't seen many of them, but probably any.
I hear the Street Fighter Chun-Li one's really bad for some reason.
Yeah, I've heard that's
like worse
real,
than
real
the original
bad.
Street Fighter somehow.
The original Street Fighter movie is schlocky enough to be fun, but I think the Chun-Li one was like
it was like
they tried to get way too much into like backstory, and there was like no street fighting and
Chun-Li,
stuff like that.
Chun-Li lore,
yeah,
but no one asked for it. I think the original Mortal Kombat. What did it like perfectly?
Oh yeah, that's another
perfect
good one too.
Perfect enough. Check out OSW did a 2-hour review of it. It was hysterical.
I might have to go with that, but both of those are very, very good, and I'd recommend them.
All right, next.
Hi, Pat and Ian, Corbin here from England. So back in the 70s and early 80s, space shooters were the biggest genre of video games. Then it became platformers in the 80s and 90s, and for the last 15 to 20 years, it's been first-person shooters. I just wondered if you had any thoughts or predictions about what might be the next big video game genre.
I don't, but that's an interesting way to, look at it. And I don't think anyone who was doing these necessarily I don't think anyone at the time could really say what the next big genre would be. I feel like once you get into 3D space, you have third person and first person, and then I think the next step is virtual reality.
Is there anything left to be discovered?
Because
when that's basically the trend it went to. This hasn't been done before. Platforms, now it's big.
First person
shooters.
Like, a lot of them weren't doing it because you couldn't do it. Technically, there was technical restrictions.
Sure.
Now the technical restrictions, there are still some when it comes to virtual reality. But as I've said before, I don't think VR is necessarily ever going to be fully adopted as a replacement. To video games because it's too active.
The last breakout genre was probably rhythm games, like 12 years ago, 13 years ago.
So I hate to sound so boring about it, but I don't know that there's really a whole lot left there to just kind of come out.
Sure.
Hey there, this is Stefan from Maryland, and I have a question. How do you feel about CRT filters for emulated games? I'm not talking the crappy ones where it's just like every other line is dark, but a proper, well-done CRT filter to try to present the original pixel art in a way that it was originally viewed, as opposed to just absolutely perfect squares on a high-def screen. Love the podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, you need filters because we didn't play things looking all nice and clean. We played with fuzzy CRT monitors, and a lot of time they did the art around CRT. So like to do like certain weird shading effects and stuff that is wiped away when you do it all clean on an emulator. And plus the colors are sometimes different. So I'm for any sort of filters that get closer, whether it's an emulator or an FPGA solution.
I'm absolutely all for them. Yeah, sure. I just don't think they I saw one, and now I wish I could remember what it was, that I was like, hey, that looks really good. But for the most part, I just don't think we're there yet. I agree they're important, absolutely, if you want to see these games how they were supposed to be seen. I just don't think we've gotten any that really quite nail it.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Brad from Whippany again.
Hey, buddy.
I was just wondering, have you ever tried something in a video game that you found so intriguing that you decided to either research it in real life or actually do it in real life? You know, like you played Pilot Wings growing up, and you're like, you know what? I want to do some skydiving or some cooking media, try out some new recipes or anything like that. Thanks. Bye.
No, but I did think about, I thought about for a little bit trying to be a paperboy because of the video game. Like, that looks like a cool job. Throwing newspapers on your BMX. I thought that would be a cool job. Kevin was a paperboy, and I went on his route with him sometimes after school. He did like the afternoon delivery.
Nice. Yeah, I was a paperboy too, but not because of the game. No, I wish I had a better answer. That's a really cool question, but I can't think of anything. I'd love to hear answers from people where that is the truth, but I can't think of anything I tried because of a video game.
Yeah,
because
what video games are so just real life based that you could try something, I wonder. Not a huge amount of.
Well, like, I mean, you could say, I mean, for instance, you know, if someone picked up archery because they were playing something, you know,
oh, okay.
Something like that.
Hey guys, this is Aaron from the Hungry Trilobite podcast. I have a question that kind of connects to your discussion of eBay from last week. Do you guys remember what newsgroup auctions were like before eBay either came around or before it got really big? It used to be a viable alternative that we've kind of left behind. Do you have any memories of that? Talk soon.
Not really. I remember watching some for like pinball machines and stuff, but I have very little recollection of what those were like.
Unfortunately, I was only on my Highlander TV news group back in the mid to late 90s. It was probably me and a bunch of like middle-aged women that were out there talking about the TV show, and I did not get on. I didn't really thought about that as a possibility.
I see that sort of. I see like a return. It's interesting they bring.
Are
these groups
still around? Do people still use those?
Pinballers do.
They still do.
I've seen an interesting kind of thing like that though with artists. I've seen artists kind of return to that where they will auction off like character art or an adopt, okay. They call them on Twitter, and it's basically the same thing for 24 hours. Reply with the new bid after the last bid, you know, and people buy things that way, and there's no fees or anything like that. I mean, I think that it probably works for small communities that are fairly well policed, where you know, you feel safe and confident.
I'll do a few more here.
Hey guys, Eddie from Las Vegas. With a lot of the recent shadiness going on with graded games and games selling for much higher than they normally would, and also having multiple buyers owning a fraction of the game, is there a possibility this is being used as a money laundering technique? I'm reminded of recent history when people were using in-game currency to wash their money, and I believe it was Call of Duty. Anyways, thank you guys.
The reason I'll say no is this, is because usually money laundering happens in an established market. Like it's been around for a bit. Like this is, it'd be weird to try to money launder and also try to establish that market with that money, if that makes sense.
Yes. Possible? Yeah. Likely? No, I don't think there's actually any money laundering
just
going
the
on.
The huge amount of collusion and backdoor doing that, that's obviously we've talked about and been proven right about. That's what's been happening here.
Hey, Patty Needham. Just curious if you could give everyone a rundown of the history behind the intro theme song. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
Okay, so CFOs were a fan of the podcast. They did the WWE themes forever. They don't anymore.
Super long time. Yeah, they don't anymore.
And they reached out and said, hey, we'll do a theme song for you. I'm like, okay. And I think it was for the 100th episode I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
That's for the 100th episode. Then did the remix for the 200th. And then I wrote them lyrics. I sort of tried to hum a melody to them over the phone while I was in Norway. And then they did it, and it was fucking great. And it's great. And then it is great.
Great dudes. I really enjoyed having dinner with them. I every once in a while, Mike and I will text about music we haven't recently, which makes me think I should probably give them a text.
I haven't texted them in a while either.
It's probably been about a year, year and a half.
So, all right. We will do... Want to do just one more?
Just one more. I got to go.
Okay. Think someone's checking in with all the great news?
I would hope so.
Big news! The Amico physical products are officially ready for your money. Shelves, ready for your shelves. But you can only buy them in packs of four or packs of eight. Hey, you do it with hot dog buns. I don't understand what the problem is. But for everyone still saying, Finnegan Fox is not exclusive, I put it right on the back of the box. Hey, kids, fun fact. Finnegan Fox is loosely based on the 2018 crowdfunded pixel art platformer Fox and Forest. Isn't that fun? By the way, if you want to know why I was using text from Star Fox in the intro for Moon Patrol, let me read you what the team originally came up with. To whom it may concern, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. Call me Ishmael. You see, so I showed it to Miyamoto-san and he's like, you know what, dude, just take Star Fox. I don't even like it anymore. Moon Man!
Well, there you go. Now we know how Tommy got the rights to use the Star Fox.
Thanks
Miyamoto
for clearing
Son.
That up, Tom.
We know Miyamoto-san was looking over your shoulder and be like, all right, I want that in there. He's done with Star Fox.
Miyamoto-san's your guardian angel.
All right, well, that's it for this podcast. This was a fun one.
It was.
This really feels like the first one we've done for fall. I know we've had fall for weeks. This felt like a fall.
The weather is outside.
Sweatshirt
weather. The weather is right, yeah.
You took your sweatshirt off.
I got too hot.
But, you know, you're a molten blob over here. But, no, this was a fun one. And thanks so much for listening and for your support. And if you want to listen to that exclusive podcast recorded just a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, go to patreon.com/CU podcast. We talked about a lot of fun stuff, and there's a mini from the game store there for you to enjoy.
That's right.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Bye.